Hello and welcome to the Playground Podcast. I'm Chris Byrne and I'm your host for this series of conversations with people in the toy industry. The Playground Podcast is supported by the Toy Guy, Global Toy Experts, and the Hong Kong Trade Development Council. In January 2024, the HKTDC Hong Kong Toys and Games Fair presents its 50th edition, and it will be a major destination for the international toy business. Highlighting innovative play, the fair provides a world-class platform for building business in Asia and around the globe. This is the place to showcase the latest toys and reach global buyers in person or online through the click-to-match platform. It's an event you won't want to miss. Find out more at hktdc.com/event/HKToyFair. Today we have a very special episode. It's our fifth annual year-end summary, a wide-ranging conversation where I'm joined by John Balch, publisher and managing director of Toy World UK, and James Zahn, the rock father and editor-in-chief of The Toy Book, Toy Insider, and Pop Insider. We talk about the year just coming to a close, some of the major issues facing the industry, and a bit of a look ahead. Sit back and listen in. Well, here we are, guys. We've been doing this for several years now, and I just wanted to start out to acknowledge our friend Richard Gottlieb, who's not here, who was always such a big part of this conversation. We always enjoyed talking to him and his perspectives. Any particular memories you guys have, John?
Oh, the time I spent with Richard at various trade fairs around the world was always entertaining. such a character. I loved the sort of idiosyncratic way that he looked at things. I would sit and talk to him about a particular trade show, and he would sort of be looking at it through a completely different lens to me. He would look and say, "John, I think it's quieter this year because there are fewer costume characters here." and he would go on to explain, why this was the case. A fascinating perspective. We'll all miss him terribly, but it was great to have spent the time that I did with him over the years.
Yeah, James, any great memories of Richard?
He was always embodying that vibe of being a big kid in the industry. He had an enthusiasm and a passion for the entire business and beyond the business, all of the people in it. And I feel fortunate to have known him and to have met him years ago, because when I was sort of really starting to dig my heels in the toy business, he was always so supportive. We connected online before we met in person, and he would send me kind notes and we'd bounce ideas off of each other. And periodically he would do some contributions for the magazine and vice versa. And it was really just like talking to a friend every time. And when we finally connected, I want to say the first time we ever met in person was together on a panel at San Diego Comic-Con.
Wow.
And we were just two kids geeking out. That's the only way I can put it.
It was wonderful, and he's certainly going to be missed. But there have been other things that happened this year. I wanted to ask you guys, each of you guys, what do you think is the biggest thing that we've confronted this year? And James, I'm going to start with you.
I think the biggest challenge of 2023 has been the fact that what we all thought was going to be the reset year this year probably needs a full extra year on top of it, and that the struggles of life changing within that whole pandemic era has not normalized in the way that folks thought that it would. And we're sort of facing this uncertainty with some positive outlook, but there's a lot that still needs to be addressed out there. So it feels like some of the excitement we hoped to see this year didn't really materialize, and hopefully it's on the horizon.
I agree. John, how about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there have been two massive factors this year. One very much within the toy industry's control, and one very much outside the toy industry's control. The one outside of our control, those three words that strike fear and terror into everybody: cost of living, usually followed by the word crisis. And it really has been a tough year this year. I think across the globe, there will be different countries with slightly different outlooks. But pretty much universally, it has been a challenging year. There have been some significant fiscal headwinds, and those really have come to the fore here in the UK. We've had interest rate rises. We've had the cost of electricity, gas, petrol has all gone through the roof. Food costs have really risen, and I think all of these things are essentials for families. And I know I've worked in the toy industry long enough to have heard the adage about toys are recession-proof, a million times. And the reality is we're not immune to these fiscal headwinds. Parents have to heat their homes. They have to put petrol in their car. They have to buy food for the family. They have to pay the mortgage or the rent, or they don't have a roof over their heads. Toys are very much towards the top end of the discretionary purchase, but they are still discretionary. And I think this year was the year where the economic challenges just tipped a lot of families into having to look at their financial outlays and make cutbacks. And I think that's been something that has worked against us all year and unfortunately completely outside the toy industry's control. The bit that was within our control was the stock carryover, I think largely in the US, during the holiday period, which has then made its way outside the US, across the globe for the whole of this year. And that certainly had a massive impact first 6 months of this year. You could buy products for a fraction of what you could normally buy them for. Retailers were obviously going to seize upon the opportunity because they appreciated that their customers were having a tough time financially. So saw the opportunity to get some sales and give them a bargain. But it did mean that some of the new products were a little slow off the grid just because the shelves were full of this kind of clearance merchandise that that was left over in the States last year. So although that's largely worked its way through the system now, it definitely had an impact, I think, across this year.
Yeah, that was going to be my point, the inventory carryover. And a lot of people who were saying it was going to be cleared by the end of the second quarter, I think, were surprised when it didn't clear that much. And I do think that there has been fear in terms of sales this year. The people have pulled the markdown triggers pretty quickly. And if you go online, you can see things like Furby, which came out at $70, is now at $50, depending on where you go. It seems like a lot of people are saying, well, the season's going to happen late, but I think the season's going to happen when people buy, but they're not going to be buying as much as they were. And that's partially generational. I think we've got the Gen Z consumer who is buying less, who is part of these Facebook groups where they barter and they trade and they don't spend money. I think that that's going to start to have an impact on the toy industry. And the other thing is, we did a survey with thetoyguy.com and we found that parents want to spend on experiences as well for kids because they bought so much darn stuff during the pandemic. The toy boxes are full. So it's going to be a little challenge as we go into 2024.
On the inventory note, what I think is particularly interesting is that here in the States, over the past 2 months, and now it's actually going into month three here, an absurd amount of top product has started landing in the value channels again. So we're seeing an incredible amount of new great product landing at Ollie's Discount Warehouse. Ross Dress for Less is taking, you would not believe the stuff you're going to find in there. Marshall's, TJ Maxx, Burlington. And, this leads into something we're no doubt going to discuss later, but a lot of it's coming from Hasbro. So we are seeing, and this is interesting how it's bounced from some of these retailers. There are a lot of Hasbro products that were retailer exclusives, particularly for Target and Walmart, that are landing in these channels because they didn't actually make it to shelves at those stores because they pulled the plug on the orders because of all that other stuff that was sitting there. And when we say pennies on the dollar, I'm talking $24.99 items selling for $3.99 and $5.99 at Ross. So, and Ross isn't selling it, without making a good profit. So just imagine the cost discount that they got on this stuff. And it's not just Hasbro. I have seen stuff from Mattel, Zuru, MGA Entertainment. I saw stuff from NKOK on my store visits. It's pretty much everybody at some point got hung up with something that shifted into value. But there is no doubt in my mind that if you go to these stores, the Hasbro stuff just sticks out because there's so much of it.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room. Just before we started recording this a couple of days ago, we're recording on the 13th of December, we heard that Hasbro had announced about a 20% layoff of its staff. And that's a big deal. I think it's part of Hasbro's revamping themselves. But what's your take on it, John?
I mean, look, obviously, as you say, this is very fresh news. Only picked this up a couple of days ago. Incredibly sad for the people who just before Christmas have found out that they're going to be need to looking for a new job. And I think, yes, it's surprised a lot of people because, of course, Hasbro had already made around 800 redundancies a few months ago. So this is sort of incremental layoffs coming on top of an already fairly heavy layoff program. Clearly, they would not have done this unless they were left with no option. And I think we've all been around the business long enough to know that big companies in the toy industry ebb and flow. They will go through periods of tremendous success. They will go through periods where, for whatever reason, the range isn't quite landing. They haven't got the right properties. They haven't got the right stock at the right price. I don't think there's any doubt that Hasbro is in one of those tricky periods. We've seen other big companies there and we've seen them pull out of it. I hear very, very good things about the new Hasbro management that are now steering the ship. They've got, without any shadow of a doubt, a very big job on their hands. But I think we're going to see some huge changes from Hasbro going forward. And I think As we can see from this week, they do need to make some serious changes.
James, any thought on this?
In general, and I'll give a very unpopular opinion among the corporate crowd out there, I think that layoffs on this scale are the epitome of corporate weakness and not making the right decisions and basically throwing it down to having human collateral. Which, if you look at the statement in that email that Hasbro CEO Chris Cox sent out to his staff, you know, it's like, oh, layoffs aren't a cost-cutting measure and this and that, and along with the usual, oh, we know it's hard that it's coming down during the holidays and all of this. If they had made the proper decisions before, they would not be in this state. And it really comes down to something that I look at as a cautionary tale. And I tell people this all the time. Overexpansion is not a good thing. And as John said, with the ebb and flow, this happens over and over again. And these people do not learn from history. It's the same mistakes every time. Oh, we're having this pandemic boom. The pandemic boom that, by the way, everybody gave themselves those pats on the back. The industry did nothing to cause that. It happened by accident, and all of these folks gave themselves bonuses and pat their backs, and, oh, we did all this great business. No one should have ever felt that that was going to be sustainable or that there would be further growth coming out of that. It's absolutely idiotic. And we all know it's not just Hasbro. There's other companies that have done this. They overhired. They overexpanded. They started throwing out tethers in all kinds of other stuff, lost focus. And then that's why we see this year too, with this Hasbro reimagining, where and Chris Cox was fairly purposeful on one of their recent earnings calls of pointing this out. They stopped referring to themselves as a play and entertainment company and went back to calling themselves a toy and game company. And I think that's a very important distinction, because I do believe too, and John, you said you've heard good things about some of the new management, which I will agree with that as well. They know that they lost focus, so they have to rein it back in. But again, it's those constant mistakes with the overexpansion and just trying to do too much that, I mean, it just really has to be reined in. And it's super, I mean, just unbelievably unfortunate that all of these folks are out of a job. But at the same time, look at the enterprise as a whole. They're still selling billions of dollars worth of toys. And then something that came up, as it usually does within all of this, is the executive compensation levels. Again, here in the U.S. especially, it just keeps on going. And it gave me echoes of the Toys R Us situation of years ago, extreme salaries, bonuses being issued when the company's losing money, stuff like that. Hasbro, and I don't feel bad calling it out because it's in the public domain and folks are talking about it now. On their annual report this year, you know, they list the top level executives and what their compensation packages are. And on one hand, you have where Chris and one of the other folks that was involved, I think it might have been Deb Thomas, had forfeited some of their incentive bonuses for 2022. So in Chris's case, it was prorated to, I think, $1.4 million. And he recommended that it go to zero because they hadn't met their target. So that's completely admirable. But then when you look at the line, it's like, okay, he made $3 million in 2021 and made $9.4 million in 2022. And now that the company is laying people off, this is part of the public discussion and this is what happens. So hopefully nobody's feeling butthurt about it. The facts are the facts. It's in there. So now they are going to be facing a little bit of a perception problem, because when you go down the list below Chris, you start to see that the average total compensation for these executives is around $6 million.
And I think that, to put a little historic perspective on it, because you did mention history. If you go back to the 60s, and as major corporations started to acquire toy companies, they built them out, and they built them out up until probably into the 80s, when they realized that a toy company is a drag on the corporate balance sheet. Quaker Oats divested of it, CBS divested of it, all of these companies that had toy companies divested out of it for the same reasons, because sales changed and they didn't anticipate what was in the future. But shifting gears a little bit, I want to talk about the future, because one of the buzzwords we're hearing everywhere is innovation. And I've been trying to keep people's feet to the fire a little bit about that, on what does that mean? What does innovation mean? And I recently talked to Joost Paulus of Moose, and they have created a whole system for measuring success based on innovation. What are you guys hearing about the need for innovation, and what does it mean?
Well, there's the $6 million question.
Right.
Because if you take the word innovation, it can mean very different things, I think, to very different people.
Right.
I've definitely seen people refer to innovation as a new colorway or a slightly new form of packaging. I love Ted Lasso. And one of the things I'm thinking of doing is taking the little Funko Roy Kent around with me, so that when people come out with patently ludicrous suggestions, Roy Kent can react, and then it won't be me reacting. It'll be Roy. Because we all get pitched, during previews, during toy shows, and, you know, some of it, I mean, look, we all get blown away by incredible new things we see, new technologies, new play patterns, somebody tapping into a trend, something out there that's broken on TikTok or wherever on social media. And we all find that fascinating. But obviously not every company can do that. And some companies are, and particularly in a challenging economic economic environment, because it's all very well, and I think, Chris, you highlighted this earlier, tremendous innovation in Furby. It's a great product,
yeah.
But it's already down by $20 because the fiscal drag on the economy, consumers are looking to, you know, very carefully at what they spend. I've been speaking, or my team has been speaking to a whole bunch of retailers recently who, you know, particularly the specialists, are saying that whereas last year people were coming in looking to spend £50, £60, this year it's more £30, £40 items that they're looking for. And they're looking for play value, and they're looking for something not necessarily the latest, coolest, hippest thing. They're actually looking for something that they perceive that their child is going to come back to and play with again and again through the year, something that, you know, is actually going to have some value and some longevity. And I think, you know, sometimes we can chase innovation, and I think that's really important as an industry that we do so. But I also think we've got to get the basics right. We've got to get great product at great value with strong enough margins that the retailers don't then have to start pulling the price down, et cetera. So, you know, it's about getting a balance, I think, between those two things.
James?
There's a lot that needs to be done on the innovation side that I don't think all of the companies are exactly in agreement on what that means totally. And John mentioned Moose, and I will say, like, one of, if not the favorite toy for me this year to play with and demo has been Beast Lab.
Oh, yeah.
That takes a classic play idea, which would be an action figure, and adds this whole backstory and mystique. And there's a lot of tech and science behind that. And that is a product, though, that if you look at the challenges of retail, how do you show that to a consumer, a mom or dad that, say, doesn't see one of us on TV showing it off? Or their kid hasn't come across a commercial for it on YouTube when it's just sitting on the store shelf, especially at a big box like a Target or Walmart, where it's sitting there and there's no real engagement from human beings in the toy department. Yeah, big thing. Customer service. Who would have thought? It sells right. Toys. But there's a lot of products out there like that. And for the past 2 years at the Toy Book, and as we're taping this, in 2 days, we're going to release our 2023 innovation issue. The biggest thing that everyone wants to talk about is either A, what John said, hey, I've got a new colorway. This is innovative. This is the new thing. No, it's not. No, it's not. And adding one little widget to something you've sold the past three seasons is not innovative. So it's either stuff we've seen before that's not innovative at all, or this year, the big thing is AI. Everyone wanted to talk about AI, and even the companies that are not overtly putting it out there, they're getting into that space. They're getting into that space. There are so many companies that are coming out with new products that are tied to this, and I'm looking at it very cautiously, yeah, because we've seen this stuff before, like years ago when every toy needed an app that you had to use with your phone. And my biggest complaint on that, and it's going to be the same here with the AI thing, and I've used this analogy before, is that if I pick up a Teddy Ruxpin from 1985, put fresh batteries in and drop a cassette in, provided the toy works, it's going to play that story and we know it works. If I have a toy today that requires something connected to the cloud or Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or whatever, I don't know if I'm buying this for my kid that the company that made it is going to support that app 2 months from now. Mm-hmm. Because if the toy flops, they cancel, you know, paying for the servers and whatever else is running it. And it's vaporware. It's gone.
Right.
I see a lot of that as being a challenge going forward with innovation. And then also, too, the price considerations and stuff. So that balance between making something new that's a total wow that the industry hasn't seen before, that most importantly kids will connect with, and then also marrying that classic play thing, because the other part of this is I think that toy industry still has a perception problem, and we're seeing it right now in the wake of this Hasbro nonsense is that people still want to beat that same drum that like, oh, kids only want to play with screens.
Yeah.
If you let them, if you just shove that, yes, they will. But you know what? The industry, it does billions of dollars every year for screenless toys. And that's still the bulk of what kids are playing with, but it's a perception issue.
Well, I agree. And some of the toys that I think are really doing well are some of the lower price items from Schilling, really basic toys. There's this thing I've been talking about called Zip String, which is just, you know, every time I pull that out and play with it with people, they go, wow, I want that. It's a string on a motor that goes around in a loop. It is, you know, because there is that fundamental child experience, that wow, that doesn't need AI. I think you bring up a really great point about supporting AI going forward. I think it offers opportunities for personalizing interaction with a toy, but at what cost is this going to happen is always the issue. And I always think of it a little bit like the, you know, that scene in The Lion King where it says, everybody look left and all the animals go to one side, this look right and all the animals go to the other side. That's how I think the toy industry sometimes responds to something like AI, because it's what they used to say, this year's blonde, right? That it becomes this year's, this hot button thing, which may make headlines, but doesn't necessarily sell toys. So I think it's a big issue. In the time we have left, I do want to bring up another big issue, because I think it's going to have an impact on the industry going forward in 2024, which is entertainment. We are seeing things like Bluey and Peppa Pig and Paw Patrol still being strong, but the movie slate for 2024 is not inspiring. Let me just put it that way. I've been talking to analysts and they're concerned that there's Marvel fatigue out there when it comes to toys or movies. What are you guys' perceptions of where we're going in entertainment in 2024? Where are the big opportunities? James, go ahead.
I'll start by just saying it was great to see entertainment and toys come back together on the right timeline this year. And there was excitement. I mean, everybody wants to talk about Barbie, but the reality is, the Transformers Rise of the Beast movie actually moved a lot of Transformers. Transformers does great for Hasbro. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, fantastic line from Playmates Toys, yeah, tied together. And another important distinction, how is it that Playmates Toys can make a fully articulated, beautiful $10 action figure and the vehicles and the playsets and everything else that comes with it, but no one else can seem to do that? You know, we got to charge $25 or $30 for a figure and say that everything else is too expensive. They managed to get it back and keep it in that affordable range. So I think that is important going forward. You have to make sure that families can afford the entertainment-based toys. I do think that there is not just Marvel fatigue. People have talked about superhero fatigue for years, and it never really happened until this year. I think the failures of certain movies and shows have probably unfairly impacted other ones, but it's something that it really gets into that licensing play too. Licensing fees have been going up for stuff, so companies are charging more for their products. The entire business and all of its adjacencies need to pull back to reality and maybe be a little less greedy on some of the points getting paid on some of this stuff so that it all makes sense. Again, going back to the value channel, there's a ton of Marvel product sitting in these value channels. And surprisingly, some of it's a couple years old at this point. I've seen in my store checks recently, I've seen The Eternals. I think that movie was 2 years ago. I've seen Shang-Chi. Yeah. And then even more concerning, starting to see more recent stuff like The Marvels or Aquaman, which isn't even out yet as we're having this conversation. I was just in a Hot Topic the other day with my kids, and the Aquaman new movie Funko Pops were already on clearance. Wow. Movie's not even out. So there's an enthusiasm there where maybe too much product, just too many things. The assortment is too wide. But I think the biggest thing that will help the toy industry with entertainment is when all of these companies get their streaming situation sorted out, because so many people leaned into these quicker theatrical shrunken windows between theatrical and streaming that eliminated some of those booms that not only Hollywood loved, but the toy industry, where you would have interest in a toy related to a movie while it's in the theater. You'd get another bump during that home video window when it came out and for rental or whatever. And then you'd kind of have the third when it came home to own. Now you don't really have that because these movies are just there and gone. They're in the theater for a month, they're on streaming, and then they're just off the radar. It feels like the whole excitement of a movie to carry through for the entire year is gone. And I think now that we're seeing companies like Disney, for example, fighting so many internal problems and going back to talking about quality over quantity, that could really help the toy business to give it space and give these brands some time to breathe and really catch traction. Otherwise, if it's constantly just on to the next thing, confuses retailers, and we know how that works. They get pile up clearance products from the last movie. They don't want to buy more for the next movie. And then you run into those weird situations, say like an Encanto, where the demand was way bigger than anybody expected. And then it takes another year to fully fill the demand. So it gets all messed up. So opportunities, but everyone has to rein it in together.
John, what are you seeing about entertainment over there in the UK?
Yeah, a lot of what James has just said holds true here in the UK as well. We've had some successes. We've definitely, I think, hit that point where superhero fatigue is a thing. Critically, some of those movies are really, becoming, getting panned now. The audiences, I think, there's just too many of them. The audiences are losing that sort of passion and enthusiasm. And I think Hollywood studios in particular maybe need to rein back in the sheer number. I think they think that more is more. Sometimes less is more. I'd love to see licensing companies or studios in particular putting more effort behind key movies and key brands. I genuinely think that we have far too much choice, and it's happening far too quickly. As James says, I've worked for decades in the toy industry, and movie licensing is like a pendulum. It goes through tough periods, then everybody cuts back, retailers cut back, suppliers cut back, licensors cut back, and then one movie, like you say, James, Encanto, cuts through, and suddenly everybody rushes. And I think there's a huge amount of FOMO. I think licensees sign up to something because they think, well, A, if it's huge and we miss out on it, that's not good for our bottom line. Oftentimes they're doing it just because they think, well, if we miss out on it and one of our competitors picks up on it. So, they often will sign up something because they feel they want to stop their competitors taking advantage of that. Sometimes the wise play is to pass. I've seen people signing up for, and producing huge ranges for movies that I've just looked at and thought, I don't see this. Yes, definitely. Disney has got a problem. That's been evident this year and perhaps for longer. But it's not just limited to Disney, and I would agree with that. But I think that they are the drivers. They're the ones that push the royalty rates ever higher. And then other licensors slipstream behind them. If Disney pushes their rate up by 2%, everybody else in the next tier down will think, well, we can push our rates up by 2%. So Disney will then go, well, then we'll push our rates up by another 3%. Right. And it does become unsustainable. James, you're absolutely right on the retail prices of a lot of licensed products, which is why it's great to call out when you get a team like Paramount and Playmates doing such a good job on Turtles. They've actually made that appeal to kids again. And a huge reason why it's not just kid adults, but it's kids buying into it, is it's at the right price point. This is not necessarily rocket science. Right. And yet, so many of the other ranges, it's almost a given that licensed ranges will be overpriced and the margins for retail will be very, very tight. And I still don't understand why ranges are reduced either when the movie launches or ahead of the movie launch. If there's any retailers listening to this who can explain the logic on that, I mean, maybe Ross Dress for Less. I'll be honest, I had a bingo card of what was going to come up today, and I did not have Ross Dress for Less. And I did not have, I just can't wait to be King from the Lion King musical on my bingo card. I'm looking forward to Sicana next year when Ross Dress for Less comes in out of nowhere as the largest growing retailer, you know?
It may in fact be. And just to finish up on the entertainment, I think that to both of your points, that the child, since we're talking about children and not adults, the child needs to have enough of exposure to a character and a storyline and a narrative that they build a relationship to the point where they want to take it off the screen and put it in their play. That's what we see with Toy Story. Turtles is a perfect example of that. These characters are so well developed that a movie comes along. It's kind of old school. A movie comes along and it's a bump within the brand life cycle, just the way in which Jurassic Park was or Star Wars is. There's always fresh way for a child to be related to that. And of course, price. I think that when you get it, it's got to be accessible, and that often means price. So we've been talking a lot, and it sounded a little bit of a downer, but I do think that there are opportunities ahead, and I just wanted to finish up our conversation for now, since we could possibly talk all day long easily, about what do you see as the opportunities and the positive things going into next year. John, I'll start with you.
Okay, so the positives from a UK perspective, I believe next year will be better economically. It's going to be an election year in the UK. I believe it's an election year in the US as well next year.
We've heard that.
And generally, in election years, the incumbent government is going to do all it can to put money back into people's pockets, because that gives it a slightly greater chance of being re-elected. So I do think that this year there's been a certain amount of management of the UK economy in order to free up next year to make people feel a little bit richer. I think that's going to be a massive plus point. We're not going to have the huge overstocks that we had to contend with in the first 6 months of this year. I think most retailers I've spoken to have really gone into Christmas trading with a view to coming out as clean as possible. I think we do have some great properties, some great entertainment properties, both in terms of movies, but also things that we're picking up from streaming. I'm really looking forward to seeing some of these Wednesday ranges that are going to be coming on board next year. I think toy companies know that they've got to work really, really hard. And I'm certainly seeing evidence of that in terms of some of the previews I've done, in terms of some of the copy we're getting in for our big Toy Fair edition. I'm getting the impression that toy companies realize that they can't be complacent, that they cannot just sit there. They're working hard on innovation. They're working hard to get the price points correct. We're seeing an awful lot of people rebalancing the price points across their range, bringing in a lot more items, coming in under price points. And I think this is also going to be a huge, huge plus point for next year. So personally, I agree with what James said at the very start. I think we all hoped 23 would be the great reset year. It didn't transpire that was the case. That didn't materialize. But I genuinely, genuinely do think that 24, the economic conditions and the sort of stock conditions across the global toy community mean we're in a far, far stronger position for next year to be the big reset year.
James, what are you looking forward to with a cheerful outlook?
I think we can all agree that some of the stuff that's in the pipeline for 24 and 25 is pretty exciting. The stuff we can't talk about because there have been some previews, and there are some great, that's where, like, doom and gloom aside, any of the challenges that the business ever faces, we know that there are people that at the end of the day, they're working hard to put smiles on the faces of kids and families everywhere. And that's going to continue. It's kind of like Isaac always says, with Christmas always coming on the 25th of December every year, there are certain things that we know are always going to happen. There's going to be some great new toys coming out, and there will be some excitement. I think getting all of this nonsense behind us from the past couple years and getting past where the industry has run up against these tough comps and these skewed numbers, it'll be nice because I think 24 is where we're finally past that. And then they can start comping against 23 and going, oh, you know what? It's getting better. So I think that that's a great thing. I think the other thing we're going to see this year coming up from a prediction standpoint is some more consolidation. I think the trade show calendar is not done evolving yet. I think we're going to see more of that. And I'm also I'm excited about what Licensing Expo is doing. We didn't even get to talk about that yet, but their whole brands at play concept, we've seen it the past couple years. More toy companies, more game companies are getting involved in that show. And then, of course, that bounces across the pond to you, John, with Brand Licensing Europe. And they're taking that theme there. So Licensing Expo is evolving to embrace the business of play as the business of play itself is evolving. And I think that that's exciting. And for me, that's probably the show I'm most excited about, because at the end of the day, all this licensed product we've been talking about, it spawns from that show and, you know, the entertainment that's going to be there and the products that come out. And at the end of the day, it ends up at retailers. So I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity and excitement ahead for the innovation, for the entertainment, and just watching people rein things back in, which I do think is happening now.
I would agree with both of you. And I think the other thing is the recent numbers out about inflation, that we're looking at inflation being down 4.1 in 2023, 3.8 in 2024, even though, as John was saying before, there is concern about the expenses of food and the daily expenses. But I think toy companies have taken that into account as they're looking at what are the costs going to be? How can we bring costs down? And as I always say, as long as people reproduce and buy stuff, we're gonna have a toy industry, which is good. And it's the toy industry has traditionally been market responsive, and we're lagging a little bit. When I talk to the analysts, they're saying they're looking more back at 2019 numbers to try and figure out where they're going to place their bets going forward. What are they hedging on? And I think that there's generally a positive outlook in terms of what's ahead, and a lot of wound licking. But as John says, clearing inventory, getting all of this stuff better and back on track. And I think it'll be a positive outlook for 2024. And we kind of always have to have that. We're in the toy industry. We always want to have that positive outlook.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, in the new year, I think a trade show dedicated podcast might be in order, because I agree with James. I think we're coming up to a very, very interesting phase in the global toy show arena. And I think there are going to be some very interesting developments over the course of the next couple of years. And, you know, that landscape is changing rapidly. And certainly from our perspective, we're keeping a very, very close eye on some of the things that are coming up and some of the areas that I think really need to look at what role they play in the pantheon of the toy community going forward. It's going to be very interesting.
And I do think that the toy industry is undergoing one of the biggest shifts we've seen since World War II. I've been saying this for a couple of years, just in terms of product, in terms of distribution, in terms of global impact and all of that. But I think for right now, gentlemen, we have to leave it there, because we have gone on as long as we normally do. But it is such a pleasure to talk to you. I look forward to this every year. James Zahn from The Toy Book, The Toy Insider, The Pop Insider, and John Balch from Toy World UK. You guys are amazing, and it's always a pleasure to have this conversation.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. It's always great, and this is something I look forward to every year, and I hope people love hearing us ramble.
I hope so, too. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us. As we noted in the close, we didn't touch on a variety of topics, and we're looking to regroup in March after we have a read on the 2023 holiday season, or festive season as John calls it, and take a look at what's ahead and how the year turned out. We appreciate your listening, and thanks for the support all year long. The Playground Podcast is supported by The Toy Guy, Global Toy Experts, and the Hong Kong Trade Development Council. Wishing you, yours, and your businesses an outstanding 2024. And we'll see you next time.